News. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The Northern Pass Hydropower Project was unveiled last fall, touted as a bold step toward more clean energy for New Hampshire and New England. The proposal came from Hydro-Québec, one of North America's largest electric utilities. The idea, 1,200 megawatts of hydropower from Canada, carried via 140 miles of transmission lines through New Hampshire. State officials initially cheered the project. Governor Lynch said it would create jobs and increase our supply of renewable energy. But the honeymoon was short-lived. Once it became clear where those transmission lines would be built and whose backyards would be affected, opposition to Northern Pass exploded to the point where Governor Lynch just told NHPR he thinks a new route needs to be drawn. The governor's comments will add to an already fierce debate over key questions at stake with this project, whether it will hurt our economy or help, whether electric costs will go down or not, and whether the energy provided is really green and really necessary. Today in The Exchange, debating Northern Pass, we'll sort through these arguments and let's hear from you, too. What questions do you have about the impact of this project on our economy, our environment, our energy mix? Do you think the pros of it outweigh the cons or just the opposite? Give us a call, The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, keep it short, theexchange@nhpr.org is the address. We have two guests with us in studio, Julia Freyer, Managing Director of London Economics International. She's analyzing the economic and energy impact of this project for Public Service of New Hampshire. And Julia, thanks for making the trip from Massachusetts, and thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Christoph Corshane, staff attorney at the Conservation Law Foundation. And Christoph, good morning and welcome back to The Exchange.
Thanks very much. Great to be here.
Well, and both of you, before we deal with the three major arguments surrounding this, again, the energy aspect, the environment, the economics, I did want to ask you broadly why you think this project has proven so controversial with people organizing and protesting in a way that we have not seen in this state in a long, long time. And Christoph, you first.
Well, first of all, Laura, the project is massive. 180 miles, 31 towns, $1.1 billion is the preliminary construction estimate. Any project of that size is going to generate a substantial amount of public interest. Unfortunately, the project has not gotten off to a good start with the people of New Hampshire. They have responded by looking at the project critically and determining that the benefits that they see in it are not sufficient to support it. And we're trying to focus on CLF is trying to focus on how this project can promote a clean energy future. And we keep looking for angles in that respect. And like many others, we're not seeing the benefits. We're not seeing the public benefits. And we're, you know, the proponents of the project have pursued a very directed strategy of pushing a particular proposal and, in fact, narrowing that proposal as time has gone on by dropping some of the alternative routes. And unfortunately, that creates a polarizing effect. And people start feeling they need to come out for or against the project early in the permitting process. And that, I think that dynamic, unfortunately, has been created by the project proponents.
So instead of saying, where do you think we should put this, New Hampshire, it's where – this is where we're going to put it, New Hampshire. Is that what you're saying, Christoph?
There was a lot of work done behind the scenes to put together a project that then was put forward to the public – as, in effect, a done deal, the financing structure, the route, there hasn't been any movement on considering alternatives.
And Julia, I'd love your thoughts, too. Why do you think this project has caused such an uproar in the Granite State?
Well, I think it's got the makings of other large-scale infrastructure projects, and in the sense that once a project is announced, I think the first gut reaction of any individual is to see whether the project directly affects them. And I think the context of the potential benefits the project creates, require a little bit more thought and consideration. And in contrast, the context of this project may cross my backyard doesn't require a lot of complicated analysis and consideration. So I think there's an emotional element to any large-scale infrastructure project, and that has come into play here as well. We've seen it everywhere as well.
Well, and Julia, let's deal right off again with the energy then. And the rap against this, as you well know from an energy perspective, is that while New Hampshire suffers the consequences, so to speak, you know, the lines are built here, New Hampshire doesn't benefit that much from this power, that this project is really more about providing electricity to Massachusetts, to southern New England. Can you address that, Julia, the energy benefits of this project for New Hampshire?
Well, I think that's really the key point that I want to make here, that New Hampshire will benefit directly from this energy. And I think the misinterpretation or misconception that has arisen in the general sort of public is that the energy is simply being transported through New Hampshire and not for consumption by New Hampshire consumers. And that is not correct, because that's not how the underlying market, we have a market for electricity these days. We've had it for over 10 years. That's not how the market for the electricity commodity works in this region. We have a New England power pool from which all the states of New England purchase electricity to meet their consumers' needs. And New Hampshire purchases just as Massachusetts does and Connecticut. And in fact, given where we are today, this market basically has a single price in most periods, most hours, for all consumers across New England. So Massachusetts consumers pay for their electricity at the same price that New Hampshire does, and so forth. So if we're all buying from the same supermarket for electricity, we're all basically benefiting from lower prices. So if the price of milk comes down and we're all shopping at the same place, we all get the benefit of that. And I think that's really the important point here to make. And that is what creates those very concrete power market benefits for New Hampshire.
And Christoph, as you well know, New Hampshire's working toward a goal of 25% renewable energy by the year 2025. This is an initiative that Governor Lynch has signed on to, that I'm sure your organization supports. So why do you think this project isn't a good step along that way, providing renewable energy for the Granite State and New England?
Looking at New Hampshire and responding to something Julia said that goes to your question about the clean energy benefits for New Hampshire, the context is important, and the fact that the project proponent is PSNH and Northeast Utilities, PSNH currently relies on its fossil fuel generating facilities to supply New Hampshire consumers. New Hampshire consumers are 70% within the PSNH customer service territory. PSNH purchases for New Hampshire consumers only 8% of its power, or roughly 8% of its power, from this supermarket that Julia is talking about, where the benefits will accrue. And so relative to other utilities, some of which are in New Hampshire but most of which are outside of New Hampshire, they do much more of their purchasing off of the regional supermarket, the wholesale market. And the current proposal is to put all the benefits that may appear in terms of carbon reductions, in terms of energy price impacts, into that wholesale market. If PSNH, which is serving most of New Hampshire, was buying power through that supermarket, it would be a very different picture. Unfortunately, they're not, and it's been confusing to many people as to why the clean energy benefits couldn't be in New Hampshire. We could. PSNH controls those generating facilities, controls coal-fired power plants. that are running inefficiently, that are old, that are actually uneconomic given the current marketplace. And so that's the confusing part to us, is why PSNH isn't coming forward with something more concrete that will benefit New Hampshire.
Julia, real quick.
Let me respond to Christoph in two ways. One way is that PSNH is required, although it does have its own generation fleet, as Christoph mentioned, PSNH is required to operate it on a least cost basis, taking into account that it, from time to time, given market conditions, could actually purchase at a lower cost from the market. It's required by its cost of service regulatory environment, and it does so. Moreover, over time, PSNH is expected to see load growth, basically more electricity demand from its consumers. With that, it will need to be buying more and more from the open market. The third and last point really on this issue is that I understand also that PSNH is in the midst of actually negotiating a power purchase agreement, which would be added to its portfolio. Its portfolio includes actual physical generation as well as long-term contracts, and that would go to benefit directly PSNH consumers.
So, Christoph, if what Julia says does happen and Public Service of New Hampshire ends up buying more of this hydropower, do you see that as a good thing? Hydropower, it's not coal, which is very dirty. It's not natural gas, which is less dirty but still releases carbon.
Certainly, if PSNH committed to purchasing a substantial amount of power from Hydro-Québec, the picture might be different, and we'd have to take a look at that agreement and its terms, the price relative to other power sources. And while we think that hydro, large hydro, could potentially play a role, and that's why we've asked the Department of Energy to look at the role of large hydro in the region as a whole and how it should fit in. We don't necessarily subscribe to the view that this is all sunshine and light coming out of Canada. We are, you know, looking at the clean energy policies of our states, and they are focused on building distributed local renewable generation. And if this project ultimately ends up crowding out some of those sources, and for example, you know, PSNH buying more of its power from Hydro-Québec versus those sources, that's a problem.
All right. We will talk more after a short break, and we'll start taking your calls. So join us, 1-800-892-6477. We're looking at the energy, economic, and environmental arguments surrounding Northern Pass.
Good morning. It's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members. And from the Lexus HS Hybrid, reducing petroleum use with an EPA-rated combined 35 mpg. Actual mileage will vary. More online at lexus.com/HS. And from G2 Plus One, providing landscape architecture, site planning, and graphic services, located in Salisbury, New Hampshire. More on separating truth from fiction on Northern Pass on the Exchange on NHPR at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, analysis of last night's Republican debate in New Hampshire. New Hampshire weather today, cloudy, some drizzle, and a chance of showers, cooler, with high temperatures from mid to upper 50s. Tonight, cloudy, some areas of fog and drizzle, lows tonight from the mid to upper 40s. And tomorrow, mostly sunny statewide, there is a chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms from the mountains north. Highs tomorrow, mid-70s across the state. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the Northern Pass debate and key questions surrounding it. We invite you to join our conversation. Call in 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. What questions do you have about the impact of this project on New Hampshire's economy, on our environment, on our energy mix? Do you think the pros of this project outweigh the cons, or just the opposite? Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Julia Freyer is here, Managing Director of London Economics International. She's been analyzing the economic and energy impact of this project for Public Service of New Hampshire. Christoph Korshain is also here. He's staff attorney at the Conservation Law Foundation. And both of you, let's go to our callers now. And BJ is calling from Canterbury. Hi, BJ. You're on the air.
Good morning, Laura. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to say I have 4 solar panels in my field in Canterbury. But I have 2 questions, and I'll get off the air to listen to the answer. I've heard the hydropower project in Canada is controversial right where it is. And the second thing is, how much energy is lost transmitting electricity through those great distances? As I understand, it can't be 100% efficient. So I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
BJ, thank you. Great questions. And I think I'll throw the first one to you, Christoph Korshain. You were starting to get to this just before the break anyway, that hydro, you feel, may not be as squeaky clean and green as some believe it to be.
That's true. Large hydro, they're very large industrial facilities. And unfortunately, this project has been marketed as almost a no-carbon project. No carbon emissions. We're going to displace fossil fuels, and there will be no carbon emissions from the power generation. That is simply not true. Hydro projects in Canada, and a number of the reasons that they're controversial is that they have major environmental impacts on the land that gets flooded by the dams. And one thing that happens when you flood land is that organic material that's left behind after the most of the vegetation is cleared will decompose. And when things decompose, they emit carbon dioxide, and that goes into the atmosphere.
Isn't that better than burning coal, though? Small amount, or I don't know how much it is, but that amount of decomposition in the carbon, isn't that better than a belching coal plant?
Well, in fact, it is better than a belching coal plant, which is a good comparison. To public services to coal plants, which will not be displaced by this project under the current proposal. But interestingly, in the first 10 years of a reservoir's operation, Hydro-Québec's own studies say that there will be substantial carbon emissions out of those projects. So it's not an unambiguous no emissions type of project. It also just one more point about the environmental impacts in Canada that are so controversial. It's landscape alteration on a major scale. It's the boreal forest in many cases. And to serve this project, Hydro-Québec is proposing new facilities.
So it's not like we've already done the damage, so oh well, but here's the power.
Exactly.
More land will be flooded and more animals will be displaced.
And certainly animals and native peoples have historically felt those projects do not serve their interests in terms of some of the metals that are released from the soil affect wildlife and fish in those reservoirs, and that can affect their way of life. So there is a controversy about this. There are impacts to be weighed. We certainly think that there are potential carbon benefits and over time these could be lower carbon sources. But we think that it should complement the region's clean energy development. Firming power for intermittent sources like wind, which can't always operate, a package would make sense, more sense.
And to BJ's other question, Julie, I'm interested in what you have to say. She says, how much electricity will we lose along the way, given that it's coming all the way from Canada?
And let me answer that first, and then I did want to jump in and respond to a couple of things Christoph said. Because of the design of the project and its proposed use of high-voltage DC-based transmission, this is actually something that's been taken into account. Ultimately, the use of the HVDC transmission technology is allowing for reduction of losses given the mileage of the transmission line. So
how much do we lose? Is it 10% or 20%?
A few percentage points.
Small.
Very small amount relative to other technology choices we have available.
And what about the critique that Christoph and many others have made that hydropower isn't as bright a shade of green as some make it out to be?
It's all a question of relatives, in my opinion. Hydropower is better than any fossil fuel-fired generation that we currently have, be that large-scale hydropower. I agree with Christoph that there are environmental impacts, local impacts that we need to consider, but I think, nevertheless, the benefits are quite compelling, and the benefits both in terms of the scale of carbon reductions here that are produced in New England from displacement of generation, as well as On the energy market price side.
All right, let's take another call. BJ, thanks for that one. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. And Annie in Plymouth is waiting. Hi, Annie, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. I just would like to point out that my feeling at this point is the thing coming through New Hampshire and the towers is only one symptom of being involved with Hydro-Québec as a corporation. And Hydro-Québec's history shows that they take over, they create an appetite, they take over industry. And once they do that and they are in here for good, and we will be answering to them for our electric needs. At the same time, it's the poster child outsourcing jobs, because we are going to send profits and jobs to Quebec. We will eliminate local power industry jobs. Those will be lost. And the jobs that have been mentioned, please understand, they are not promising jobs to New Hampshire citizens. They talk about jobs, but they will bid jobs out, and they will use their own people for most high-tech jobs. So please, please be aware that we could well be selling our soul to the devil by inviting Quebec into the Northeast power grid.
Okay, Annie, thanks a lot for calling. And, you know, both of you, this is an area I want to explore, too. We've talked about the energy pro-con. We've talked about the environmental pro-con. But let's talk about the economics. Julia, you first.
It's important to understand that Hydro-Québec is already a participant in the New England market. Despite some of the characterizations that have been made, the New England market is extremely competitive. It's monitored by a number of watchdogs and federal and state regulators, and Hydro-Québec's participation in the market has been, if you can use the word, squeaky clean as other suppliers. It's on a competitive footing with many, many other suppliers here in New England. It won't be able to dominate the market with this project. It will increase its level of imports into New England market, but that's the intent or the basis for it. I understand your concern about sending profits outside, but on the flip side, Hydro-Québec's energy is going to produce lower prices, and lower prices basically mean a boost to our overall economy.
And I do want to get you in on this, Christophe, but here's an email that's related from Nancy in Concord. She says, Hydro-Québec is owned by the Quebec government. Will Hydro-Québec be subject to the New Hampshire business profits tax? Will Hydro-Québec have all taxable profits, or will profits go back to the Quebec government? Now, this is getting really detailed, Julia, so you may not know, but this again relates to who's really going to benefit economically from this project? I'm hearing concern from that from our emailer and our caller.
Well, you have to remember, Hydro-Québec has signed on for the benefit of ratepayers here in New England, consumers in New England. Hydro-Québec has signed on to a commercial arrangement where it is taking on all the risks of the capital investment and operating costs of this project. So it's making a bet in the business sense, that it could make some profits off of the sale of energy, and it's willing to commit to fund the transmission project. I think from that perspective, it is the project, from a consumer's perspective, the project is quite compelling, where it's producing benefits without burdening consumers with obligation to pay for its costs.
Yeah, there's no state subsidy.
There's no state subsidy. There's no arrangement where consumers would have to pay for transmission, as they currently do for all other traditional transmission projects that we've built in the state and in the region as a whole.
Economic benefits or drawbacks, Christophe, and then we'll go back to our phones.
I think the caller, Annie, raises an important point about who benefits and why this project has been designed the way it's been designed. It has been designed to benefit Hydro-Québec, and it is not true that it completely leaves ratepayers whole. Ratepayers will be paying for Hydro-Québec to recoup its costs in constructing the line through the wholesale market that we were discussing earlier. That is a rate that the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has approved. In fact, it's approved it with additional, quote, adders, which make it above market. So they're actually being a bit misleading when they say they haven't sought subsidies. They've sought legislative changes to make large hydro qualify for the renewable portfolio standards. They haven't been successful in 5 out of 6 New England states. But the idea that this is a free ride for New England, I think, is an incomplete picture.
Well, as we talk about the economics of this, let's look at property values. That issue has also been huge in this Northern Pass debate. Let's dig into that a little bit more. Joining us now on the phone from Lancaster is Peter Powell. He's owner of Peter W. Powell Real Estate, former chair of the COAS Economic Development Corporation, and he's been looking at this question of transmission lines and their impact on property values. Peter Powell, real nice to have you. Welcome back to The Exchange.
Thank you.
What effects have you been seeing on property sales, Peter, in the North Country, just from this debate over Northern Pass, just from the possibility that these transmission lines might be built?
That's been dramatic. We here in my own office experience it with regularity, and it's happened all up and down the North Country. I've heard reports from Pittsburgh through Sugar Hill down into Plymouth and Rumney and on south. The mere threat of this thing and the impact that it could have on one's investment is deterring activity in the marketplace, keeping some people from putting their homes on the market for fear of loss and making it very difficult for others to sell. What happens is that when people are confronted with controversy regarding their investments, they will practice prudent avoidance to avoid threats to health, safety, and the value of what they put into a property. And for those reasons, people are voting with their feet, essentially.
So it's slowed down your sales already and those of your colleagues in the North Country.
It has affected particular properties very, very profoundly.
Well, has anyone clearly defined how much property values would go down if all of a sudden, you know, you had a tower in your view?
There have been studies all over the world to measure the impact of any form of environmental contamination on property values, and including high voltage tension, whatever they call those things, above ground power lines in various markets. Here in Dalton, just next door to Lancaster, a property owner commissioned a study to see what impact it would have on his own property. And that study, as you know, showed losses in value for various sizes of parcels in various proximities to the proposed line through that property, which was an alternative route, ranging from 60% to 90%. All around the country and in Canada and in South America and South Africa and in Scotland and other places, whether measuring the effects on tourism or measuring the effects on property values, the central tendency has shown that values will be impacted, and they will be impacted negatively when in that marketplace the impact of the line is so close or so objectionable that it creates a visual or other impact. Here in the North Country, and if we get into a discussion about degrees of change, those studies have occurred primarily in urban and suburban areas where people are already choosing among what's left of land to develop and properties to buy. In other words, the choices are different, and they're already contending with a degree of contamination from congestion, noise, air, or other pollution, and everything becomes relative. When those same people who may pay a little less for a property affected by something like this in Bloomfield, Connecticut, or Taunton, Mass., come north to northern New Hampshire or any rural area in this state, they will not accept what they tolerate at home, because at home they have to purchase. It's where their opportunity, their family, their employment is located. The reason they're coming here is to find something better.
And escape from that, so to speak.
To escape from that. And they will not accept that kind of contamination or encroachment.
Well, Peter, a question for you, because, as I said, you've been involved in economic development in the North Country for a long time, in addition to your job as a real estate professional. You mentioned tourism, and that's certainly part of the concern in the North Country, that, like you said, people won't come if they have to see these things. Have you looked at that elsewhere? Have there been studies that have shown, you know, this area was a successful tourist area until Project X came in and the tourism economy dried up? Is this based on fact, or is it just a concern?
I couldn't tell you examples of that. I'm sure if you went to the Atoll Islands or someplace where total devastation wreaked havoc upon a community, certainly those things affect environmental contamination does affect tourism as well as everything else. But studies have been done of the Patagonia region in Chile, of South Africa, where game reserves were involved, of Scotland, where important tourist destinations, castles, and that sort of thing were all threatened by high-voltage lines. And they found that, interestingly, and this doesn't sound very profound, but it has a point, that where there is no tourism, the impact of high-tension lines had little impact on tourism. But where you have tourism, because it is a highly sensitive, perception-based process where people rely on, where the entire industry relies on individual experiences, and the quality of that experience is referred outward from there, wherever tourism is important, developments such as the one that we are facing here have a negative impact. And there are studies that you can find online that demonstrate that. The degree of impact will depend, in the case of tourism, on the important view sheds. You know, one of the things that happens in an area of flat land where you have a highly developed region, as in the study areas in Mass and Connecticut, where some of these other studies have been performed and analyzed, is that people look out and see a power line, and you begin to measure what the impact will be if they see a pylon or a tower or a line, whether the right-of-way is landscaped, how far away they are, and so forth.
So lots of variables, yeah.
Yeah. Here in the North Country, we have valleys and ridges and peaks and mountains, and you may look out for miles. And some of these view sheds are incredibly important, not only to individual landowners and individual businesses, but to the people who come here to enjoy them. And if you impact those negatively, the risk is that you will lessen their attractiveness and therefore lessen their appeal and lessen the volume of people who will come. And the whole thing about all of this is, if we're going to sit here and decide whether this body is going to lose a finger or a hand or an arm or a leg or cut us off at the neck, we're beginning to decide what level of sacrifice can be made by people affected by this line in order to create a benefit for someone else. What is that benefit, and to whom will it accrue? Is it to the people of New Hampshire or to others? Certainly not this region, we have determined, and that's why the North Country Council, the Timberland Owners Association, and others have opposed this project for good economic reason.
Well, and Peter, I got to cut you off there, and I really appreciate you joining us. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Peter Powell, owner of Peter Powell Real Estate in Lancaster. Again, he's been looking at this question of transmission lines, property values, and tourism. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us in the exchange, and we'll be right back.
Today on Word of Mouth, warning to whistleblowers. News organizations eager to catch up with WikiLeaks offer citizen journalists a place to expose secrets, but no legal protection for what follows. Plus, de-digitization, turning icons from the online world, think the Facebook like button, into real-world products. I'm Virginia Prescott. Word of Mouth is keeping it real. Today at noon on NHPR.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Granite State College, the university's System of New Hampshire specialist in online education. Offering total online associate, bachelor, and master degree programs, granite.edu. And from Bernstein Scherer and its Labor and Employment Practice Group, providing representation to all-size businesses, large or small, in Manchester, and online at bernsteinscherer.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the potential economic, energy, and environmental effects of the proposed Northern Pass hydropower project. Join us, 1-800-892-6477, or email exchange@nhpr.org. Before the break, we were looking at the impact of Northern Pass on property values, especially in the North Country, and on North Country tourism. We talked with Peter Powell, and now we're going to bring another voice into our conversation, Brian Underwood, chairman of the New Hampshire Real Estate Appraiser Board, principal of BC Underwood LLC. He's been working on behalf of Northern Pass to examine the impact of transmission lines on property values. Brian Underwood, good to have you. Thanks for coming on The Exchange.
Good morning. morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, we just heard from Peter Powell a really deep, deep concern that property values in the North Country will plummet if this project goes forward. Viewsheds, as he put it, will be damaged. What do you think? Your work has shown that property values will not be as badly damaged as others say.
That's correct. I've done some. I've been asked to do some preliminary research in two towns, one up north in Littleton, and we also looked at Deerfield in the southern tier of the state and did an analysis and study to see whether or not there were, in fact, impacts on value from existing high-voltage transmission lines that already are present in the state.
And you found that property values would go down by how much? Do you have a number?
Well, we didn't find any indication that property values decreased whatsoever.
Not whatsoever?
No. And as a matter of fact, what we did is, just in terms of brief scope description, we looked at, for example, in Littleton, there's an existing high-voltage DC line that runs along the Connecticut River Valley. And so we looked at every parcel that either abuts that corridor or is bisected by it. And then we looked for sales transactions of properties along that corridor. And we did the exact same thing in Deerfield. And without exception, there were no discounts to the value of the property when it sold, nor were there any indications on any of the tax assessment cards that the municipalities had reduced the assessed values of any of those properties that were either bisected by the high-voltage line or abutted the high-voltage line.
He also had a deep concern about the impact on tourism, that people who come to northern New Hampshire from, you know, Connecticut or Massachusetts want that pristine view, and a real concern expressed by Peter Powell and also by many in the North Country, Brian, that, you know, those views will be ruined and tourists will say, you know, I think I'll go somewhere else, thanks.
Well, I'm not an expert on tourism. All I can tell you is that if one looks at the existing high-voltage transmission line corridors in the state, they already exist. There was an article that was published a couple weeks ago in the Concord Monitor, for example, where I believe the reporter spent the day in Lincoln. And there were comments in the newspaper from folks in Lincoln that indicated that, you know, that the high-voltage transmission line, the proposed one coming through for Northern Pass, would have all of these various impacts. And the fact of the matter is that there already is one that runs through Lincoln, and it's been there since 1959. So I think some of the emotions are obviously running very high right now with sort of the uncertainty of, you know, the exact location of the project in certain places. But, you know, in reality, the market data that we've looked at in the preliminary study would indicate otherwise.
You know, I'm kind of struck by the property value issue, Brian, and obviously you're the professional, not me, but it just seems to the layperson that, you know, one day you've got a mountain in your backyard and the next day you've got a mountain with two transmission towers on it or within the view. It just seems to the layperson that that would have to bring your property values down because it's just not as pretty to look at.
Right, and in some cases it may. But what the study data indicated was, for example, there's a property that we found in Littleton that sold back in 2010. It sold for $400,000. It was a really nice, newer, modern home that was constructed on a parcel of land that had water frontage on the Connecticut River. And in order to get from the house to the riverfront, you had to walk underneath high-voltage transmission lines. They were between the house and the waterfront. And that property was assessed by the town. I believe it was around $284,000, and the property sold for $400,000. So there are market transactions of properties that are either bisected or abut high-voltage transmission corridors that do sell. Now, I think, to your point, what may be the case in some instances is that we are changing, we're seeing different buyers for those properties. Some people, clearly, I believe Mr. Powell indicated, you know, who moved to the North Country to get away from some of the more metropolitan type characteristics, may not accept those characteristics in property that they buy up here. But the fact of the matter is that we have transactions that occur in New Hampshire that don't indicate any loss in property value, particularly in the two towns that we've looked at thus far, and that's Littleton and Deerfield.
All right. Well, Brian Underwood, lots to untangle here. I appreciate you giving us a couple minutes of your time.
You're very welcome.
That's Brian Underwood, chairman of the New Hampshire Real Estate Appraiser Board. And let's go right back to our callers, Christoph Corche and Julia Freyer. The number 1-800-892-6477. Dick is calling from Laconia. Dick, thanks for waiting. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, that's okay. Thank you for taking the call. I'm a small hydropower operator in Laconia, and I have friends that operate other small plants that are basically in the dams, in state-owned dams around the state. And to my knowledge, a good number of them, one in particular and probably myself, are moving out of the state, taking our jobs, and also taking the work that we do maintaining the state dams, because the price that we're paid in this state is so abysmally low. The state, at a sort of political level, pretends to be very green and is generating a lot of interest in supporting small hydro or small green renewable energy sources. But in reality, we are paid that NEPOOL price for power, which is typically around 4.5 to 5 cents for the last 4 years.
So, Dick, NEPOOL is New England Power Pool, right?
That's correct. It's the price that was referred to earlier by your economist consultant there.
So what does this mean, Hydro-Quebec, mean for you? Does that mean small hydro producers are just going to get out of the state because they can't compete, kind of like when Walmart moves in, small stores can't compete?
Yeah, very much so. There's two effects. One, because these giant hydros are marked as renewable, they'll drive any credits that we get. In other words, any renewable energy credits, the price of those will be driven to zero. And the other effect is that the price of power that's on the NEPOOL exchange, which is what we get paid, is essentially guaranteed to stay very low.
Well, it's
so
good
frankly,
go ahead.
We're leaving. I know at least one other guy that's leaving already, and I believe there are several others. I've been led to believe we're trying to renegotiate with the state because the state needs us to take care of their dams. And there's
right.
no way
Lots
we can do
then,
that
I'm sure.
in this state.
Well, Dick, just hold on a second if you could here. I'm glad you called because here's someone, Christoph, who's directly involved in this industry. What do you think?
I think that it reflects the unintended consequences of the project design. It also reflects, quite frankly, a deliberate business plan by the Public Service Company of New Hampshire to rely on its aging facilities, which, by the way, are much more costly currently than the New England Power Pool price, to pass the costs of those facilities on to residential ratepayers while business ratepayers flee in a process which is called migration, to lower cost providers who are paying the wholesale price. And instead of Public Service of New Hampshire promoting renewable energy within the state by offering competitive contracts with facilities like the Callers that would allow them to finance their facilities over a longer term through a power purchase agreement, those options apparently are not being offered. And that power they're generating through their own facilities at an uneconomic rate is taking up all of that space in their portfolio. And that's not acceptable.
Julia, to you and then back to our callers.
Dick, you mentioned earlier that you're getting the price that's determined in the New England Power Pool in that supermarket I mentioned earlier to the listeners. So, in fact, when you say you're leaving the New England region, not just New Hampshire. And it may be that right now prices are very low. And we have a lot of resources, steel in the ground, that are competing head-to-head.
You mean fossil fuels?
Fossil fuels, but also other types of resources, nuclear, various renewables type type of resources that are competing. And that basically bodes well for consumers. We like it when there's competition. And unfortunately, competition means that those producers who cannot compete are left out. But I think the important point to make is that this particular project, Northern Pass, is not going to be competing directly with the small renewables that do get subsidies. We refer to them as renewable energy credits, subsidies from various states right now. Small hydro does, but this project will not qualify, as we mentioned earlier. So it won't displace the ability of those types of generators to make those types of revenues and profits.
All right. And thanks for that one, Dick. And let's go to Tyler in Hebron. Hi, Tyler. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I would just like to say this is not unrelated to the previous call, but often people feel powerless to change anything with these giant corporations. And so people put up these yellow signs all over the place saying, stop Northern Pass. And, you know, that's just one option. And so now everybody knows what they're against, but it'd be good to know what they're for. And this is an awesome opportunity to get involved with local environmental organizations or even organizations on the statewide level.
Well, Tyler, how do you, given that you feel that way, and I do want to, you know, work on that question, but to you, what are your thoughts about Northern Pass? Do you think it's a good idea for New Hampshire or not?
I don't. But there are things that people can do so that, you know, I don't want it to go to Vermont, and it's not just because I don't want it in New Hampshire, but what I would like to see are people changing their lifestyles so that we don't have to keep dealing with these types of scenarios.
You know, Tyler, thanks for the point. And Christoph, to you, you know, he's saying, hey, it's not enough to say no to Northern Pass. What are you for? This came up in a show that you and I did a couple months ago on a lot of opposition from environmental groups to green energy projects like wind, solar, hydro, whatever. So I'm real interested in his question. Thanks, Tyler.
He raises some excellent points about energy efficiency, reimagining the regional power grid for the next 40 years, and that's one of the reasons why we are skeptical of a traditional transmission project that is primarily about economic benefits for the sponsors. And so, we think this is an opportunity, a large investment, $1 billion in infrastructure, to think more broadly and to, you know, forthrightly analyze the benefits that are, you know, that are potential, improve those benefits through the public process if at all possible, but also forthrightly deal with the costs. And I think that's what people are reacting to when they see an economic study that is put out about 1,200 jobs or a study about property tax impact that does not consider whether prices may go down and assessments may go down. They become very skeptical and want to move into an opposition stance. But it is an opportunity to look at the regional energy picture as a whole and which sources could contribute and which sources should contribute if we are going to be honest about the clean energy goals that the states have set.
So do you put Hydro Quebec and this Northern Pass project, Christoph, in the category of what's called green NIMBYism, the not in my backyard syndrome?
I think,
you know, I love green power, but not in my backyard.
That's one way to look at it. Unfortunately, that's kind of the message that the project proponents have tried to spread, which is that people who are skeptical or opposed to this project are about their, you know, backyards. I think that's really deeply unfair to people who are trying to reckon with the way a $1 billion infrastructure project that will be in place for 40, 50 years will affect the energy future of the region. And there are lots of important policy questions that are raised by that, and it's not just enough to say this project is a good thing.
Tyler, thanks for the question. What do you think, Julia?
Well, I think there's a couple of points to take away from this. And Christoph mentioned this idea, well, what is our future price outlook? Will prices go down? Will prices go up? And I think that is an important thing to keep in mind when you want to put this project in the context of what is happening to our electricity costs. Right now, we're in a low-price environment. I think most of you can recognize that our electricity bills have come down from where they were a few years ago. But it's in fact, that low-price environment that makes us a little bit myopic in looking forward and planning for new investment. And this system does require new investment, and this investment that is being proposed with Northern Pass, I think, is truly a unique proposition for consumers because they get the benefit of that investment in terms of reduced electricity prices, and studies have shown that they could be as much as 30 cents per kilowatt hour reduction, which in the context of current prices is basically half of what you pay right now for electricity, for the commodity cost of the electricity. But also because we're currently oversupplied, I think we're in a tenuous state condition where we are likely to see retirements coming in the future. We are likely to see higher prices.
Retirements meaning electric power plants coming offline.
Yes.
Because they're just getting really old.
Getting old, getting costly to operate. We're getting to a point of transformation where we want to, I think we can all agree, we want to go to a cleaner energy future for this region. And I think this project puts us on the right path because it provides an opportunity for consumers to take the benefits. And I really do think you won't see any transmission cost charges associated with this project on your bill.
All right. Well, I want to thank everyone who called and trust that we will do more programs on this topic in the future. And for now, Julia Frey, I want to thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Julia Freyer, Managing Director of London Economics International, and Christoph Korshain, thank you for your time as well.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure.
Christoph Korshain, staff attorney at the Conservation Law Foundation. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our intern is Kristen Leffler. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.